You're listening to 88.3 Southern FM on the fringes of East Bentley in the heart of Morley Community Village.
Coming up right now is The Space Show. Welcome to The Space Show, presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I'm Andrew Rennie, and on the panel, back way back on Earth in Mission Control, we have Richard. On this week's program, we recognise the death of Darren Hinch. First up, let's go to Space Show News. Most of you will be familiar with the character called Darren Hinch. He was born in 1944 on February the 9th in New Plymouth, yes, in New Zealand. And he died on July 10th here in Melbourne, aged 82. In those 82 years, he packed an incredible amount of activity. Well, my understanding is he died in his sleep of pneumonia. Now, Darren was a good friend of the Space Association. He spoke at some of our events in 2004 and that sort of period. And for a time, we sold his CD, Liftoff, on consignment. In this feature we're going to play, which is that the contents of that CD, we will hear some music in the background at times. Well, that's by Southern FM's very own Peter Sullivan, playing his music on the CD. And Peter, of course, is on air from Wednesdays from 4 till 6 p.m. So let's go to the CD, which is about the launch of Apollo 11.
When I was a teenager, I would fight with my dad to get first go at our local newspaper. I couldn't wait to read about the latest exploits of seven men chosen to be the first humans to go into space. Men like John Glenn, Alan Shepard, and Gus Grissom. They were the Project Mercury astronauts. They were going to fly in rocket ships to far-flung places that we'd only seen in the Eagle comics. Dan Dare and the villain, the Mekon. The first astronauts were introduced to the world with great fanfare in Washington in 1959, 50 years ago. It was the height of the Cold War. The Soviet Union had already hurled the grapefruit-sized Sputnik into orbit in 1957. And the space race was on. Alan Shepard was due to blast off in October 1960 to be the first man in space. But there were problems with the Redstone rocket and frustrated delays at Cape Canaveral. There was another crucial postponement in March 1961. And then, a month later, from behind the Iron Curtain, came the news that shocked and scared and enthralled the world. In April 1961, cosmonaut Yuri Gagarin had orbited the Earth at 27,000 kilometres per hour for nearly 2 hours. Then, in May, Alan Shepard made an anticlimactic suborbital flight. It lasted just 15 minutes. He travelled only 300 miles downrange. The West was petrified and panicky. We all believed in this new scary age of nuclear weapons that he who conquered space would rule the world. Within days, the boyish new American president, John F. Kennedy, went before Congress to reassure the American people and make this pledge to the world.
I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal before this decade is out of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the Earth.
Who could have believed that before that decade was out, 40 years ago in July 1969, men would not only be on the moon, but that teenager, fighting with his dad over his local newspaper, the Taranaki Herald, in a small town in New Zealand, would be at the Apollo 11 launch site to watch Neil Armstrong, Edwin Buzz Aldrin, and Michael Collins blast off into the unknown. And that was me. As a young reporter, I was there at the launch pad, watched up close as Armstrong, Aldrin and Collins waved their emotional goodbyes to their fellow NASA astronauts. Then, on a blazing hot Florida summer's morning, we watched and physically felt the noise as a Saturn space rocket, the size of a 36-story building, lumbered aloft, taking three men to the moon. And I broadcast that historic event live to more than 50 radio stations around Australia. On the 40th anniversary of men going to the moon, this is how it sounded. The other voices, back in Australia, are those of 2GB announcer Terry Deer and Macquarie News director Brian White.
Everything is now ready at Cape Kennedy. In the studios here at 2GB is the head of news programs, Brian White. Waiting at the Cape is our correspondent, Darren Hinch of The Sun.
Hello, Darren. This is Brian White. Do you hear me?
Yes, I hear you loud and clear, Brian.
Now, what's the story, Darren?
Well, Brian, it's hard to believe that this is really it. Just over 3 minutes and three men will actually go to the moon. I know we've talked about it for so long, and I guess millions of words have been written about this day, but it's still almost impossible to believe that right out there in front of me there are three men strapped into their seats at the top of that huge rocket. And I mean, it's a really huge rocket. And it'll send them where man's never been before. Just to fill you in on the latest picture, Brian, it's now 3 minutes and 25 seconds before blastoff. The astronauts went on board at 9 o'clock your time, and they spent their final 2.5 hours checking out all the systems. I saw them leave their quarters and head for the launch pad a while ago, and frankly, except for their Buck Rogers outfits, you'd never have known that these brave men were actually going to the moon. If you had a look at the crowd, though, you could have seen what a serious business it was. The astronauts themselves were waving and giving the thumbs up sign, and they were smiling, but some people revealed the true emotion that shadows this whole shot. They were crying. And I'll have to admit that when the door of the van closed behind those men and they drove off for the last time before they come back, a shiver went down my spine too.
Darren, tell us, what's the atmosphere like there at the moment?
Well, I've been here since around midnight. We had to come out that early because it was the traffic is so bad that you couldn't have got out here otherwise, and we're scared we'd miss the whole shot. There are more than a million people watching the shot, according to the Department of Defense, but the tempo's really picked up in the last hour or so. It gets you right in the pit of the stomach now. It really does. You can feel it. The people now are lining up, even journalists have seen a heck of a lot of big stories. Nothing can beat this one, and I doubt that there's a person who could be cynical enough to say that it's just another rocket. It really is the big one.
Darren, what's the weather conditions like there this morning?
Well, they've really turned on some Florida weather for us. I'm sitting here under the open sun in a sort of a press stand, which is 3 miles across the water from the rocket. And the sun's really beating down on us. I guess it's close to 100 degrees now. In fact, it's so hot I can hardly hold the telephone receiver. And you've got 3,500 very sweaty journalists down here at the moment, I can tell you.
Darren, you've got about 1 minute and 40 seconds or so before blastoff. What would you say is the most dangerous point coming up immediately?
Most dangerous thing of the whole thing, after the blast-off, and you have to remember that three men once died in an Apollo mission, that was Apollo 1, that's when they try to blast off from the moon to come back, because if they don't reach 50,000 feet and their engine can only fire once, it means that they must crash land on the moon. They have to reach 50,000 feet for Michael Collins in the command module to be able to swoop down and rescue them. He said he can come down to 50,000 feet, but then there are big mountains that flow, and he can't come down any lower. So that's the big crucial thing of the mission to watch. Now, right now, Brian, it's 1 minute and 1 second. We're going into the final countdown on man's flight to the moon. And it's just absolutely incredible here. The rocket is just raring to go. It's 50 seconds now until man takes off on this flight. And frankly, I just can hardly describe to you the excitement and the tension and the feeling of goosebumps that, well, this time we're really going, and it starts a whole new phase of man's life. Down to 31 seconds, 30 seconds. We've got so little time now before we finally take off. It'll lift off very slowly at first. Ignition will come at 8 seconds probably. And there are these big sort of brake things which will hold it down until we get to zero. And then it will take off very slowly. So slowly, I think it's going to fall over. Now, I'll give you the final countdown.
Righto, Darren, take it.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6. We have the ignition sequence. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. And the flames, you can see them now. And she's ready to go. It's
And there it goes. It's incredible. This huge white flame. There's smoke all around this thing. I'll just let you listen for a second to the noise. The people are on their feet now saying, go, you beauty. Go, and here it comes now, this roar. And we can still see it. It's gone into a very small patch of cloud. It's going to become clear again now. Well, there we go. It's fiery. It's a
Darren, thank you for a wonderful call. Thank you very much. Good night.
Okay, goodbye.
40 years on, I remember it as if it were yesterday. Hearing it still gives me goosebumps and brings tears to my eyes. For those brave men out there in space, staking out mankind's new frontier, and for those of us lucky enough to report on it firsthand, it was an unforgettable adventure. And a postscript for trivia quiz fans. What did Neil Armstrong say when he stepped down from the lunar lander, the Eagle, to place man's first footprint on the moon? Everybody knows.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. Which is probably the most famous and most quoted piece of historical tautology ever. Think about it. In that context, man and mankind meant the same thing. What Neil Armstrong had rehearsed and planned to say was, that's one small step for a man, one giant leap for mankind. And that makes sense. But he goofed. Probably nerves. And the official man-mankind quote, well, it stays. It's even inscribed on a pair of pewter cufflinks I was given by NASA as a memento. Still got them. Actually, in the months before that historic landing, there was much speculation as to what Armstrong's immortal first words would be. Would it be a religious message? A piece of American propaganda? Something schmaltzy? Something political? Something really personal? Some people even hoped for a joke, like, holy cow, it is made of cheese. And what does the plaque say that Armstrong and Aldrin left on the moon? Along with an American flag at a place called Tranquility Base, it says, here men from the planet Earth first set foot upon the moon, July 1969 AD. We came in peace for all mankind. The plaque was signed by all three astronauts and President Richard Nixon. It also had two drawings of Earth, the Western and Eastern hemispheres, North and South America on one, and Europe, Africa, the Soviet Union, India, China, Australia, on the other. And it was bolted to the spindly legs of the ladder on the descent stage, which was left behind when Eagle blasted off to rendezvous with Collins in the mothership for the long journey home. And that American flag? Well, it was blown over by the Eagle's engine exhaust as Armstrong and Aldrin headed for home. It lies forever in the lunar dust. That was all 40 years ago, and when the Apollo program ended with Apollo 17, man never went back. All that remains are moon rocks and memories. Fond memories, indelible memories, of an amazing voyage into space. A voyage that started with the liftoff of Apollo 11 from Cape Kennedy, Florida, on July 16, 1969. I'm Darren Hinch.
And we must thank Darren, a good friend of the Space Show, a good friend of the Space Association of Australia, dead here in Melbourne on July 10 at the age of 82. And as I mentioned, that music you heard in the background was by our very own Peter Sullivan, who is on air on Wednesdays between 4 and 6 p.m. right here on 88.3 Southern FM.